There's a gaggle of peddlers and crafters who routinely set their stalls up in the woods each month, for one night a month, in a place you can only find with either a tip from the last market or a recommendation from a friend. A place of wonders, laid out with mysterious devices and purported charms. You can buy a curse for your enemies, a blessing for virility or fertility, and any number of other amusements. Your eyes are wide with interest, but of course you know better than to be too drawn in. Magic is no substitute for force of will, for precision of mind. Magic is no match for strength of body, for resolve of spirit. You're not foolish enough to protest that magic is not real when it's right before you and all around you. Everyone knows it's real, but how strong can it be when its adherents have to meet out here in this huddle of huts and stands? Wouldn't they be ruling the world if magic was all that? Oh, you think so? A figure stands in the shadow of a small hut. You know it was not there a moment ago, for it is right in your path, but you walk up to it anyway. On the table in front of her are various devices in crystal, in glass, and in what looks like rubber, but squishy and easily moved. There are sleeves, there are sex toys for insertion, there are other beads and bobs clearly intended for erotic satisfaction. And looking you in the eye the moment you look up, a woman with short-cropped brown hair, a very short skirt as well. She's leaning against one of the posts of her doorframe, watching you inspect her wares. Her eyes are black, entirely black, no whites at all. She looks at you with red lips turned up in an obvious grin. You ask her what she's talking about. You think one person's strength alone is superior to magic? To all of my art, all of my artifice. She waves a hand in a gesture which takes in the table, what is upon it, and extends to gesture to several other nearby stands. She's quite young, must be 20 at the most, but her confident stance is a definite challenge, and it puts her breasts on display under her low-cut camisole. The skirt raises another inch as she stretches luxuriously. She waits for an answer to her question. Unsure if you'd been talking out loud, or if something else is going on, you decide to back it up. You tell her that yes, you don't really believe there's much to all that magic. Well, your strength seems to be faltering in at least one respect. You see, she's following your gaze. She can see you looking at her body as she deliberately moves to tempt, to seduce. You wonder if you're turned on enough that she can tell, somehow. I was going to ask if you were strong enough to withstand the allure of my magic, but now I'm certain that you aren't. You bristle at that, stepping forward to say something, but you are met by her outstretched hand reaching, sliding one finger up under your chin, sliding along. You don't even need to try to articulate a protest before she relents. Okay, okay, you're right. This isn't magic, just my own thoroughly non-magical charm. Like this. She raises her lacy, many-layered skirt to show one of the layers underneath, and rips a piece easily and neatly from its edge. She then picks a wooden box, closed, not on clear display. Unlike the rest of her stock, she takes it from beneath the table. Here is something very special. I can't spend much time on someone who doesn't believe in my power, and because I like you, here's something tempting, teasing, but not so magical to remind you of these. She stretches to her full height, showing off her legs, standing on tiptoe. Then she presses both the box and the lace into your hands. She caught you staring at her legs. No charge, of course. But if you fail, if your strength is useless against what's in that box, if you try to fight and fail, then you must come back and tell me as much. As well as telling anyone else who asks you about me just what happens. It'll make a wonderful testimonial. Mystified, and more than a little turned on, clutching the scrap of lace and the box as well, you head back the way you came, out of the market rather faster than you thought you would, and you head for home. Despite yourself, you're quite looking forward to finding out what is inside the box, but you don't want to open it here and have her witness your eagerness. After all, your goal is to debunk the contents of this box, right? Home, in through the door, sealed, safe. You set the box down on the table and open it up. There's a manual on top, or something like it. a single large sheet with a few stanzas. You note the manual's description seems to set out goals, puzzles, some kind of system, but you have no reason to be beholden to it. Magic is nothing compared to strength, of will and of body. You can surely power through and enjoy yourself with this toy. And indeed, under the manual you see a toy, a long sleeve with rubbery sides. The inside, you see when you part the lips at one end, is silky soft. You scarcely think it would even require any lubricant. But you're not going to fall for her obvious ploy. There's nothing to it. You toss it aside, putting it down anywhere, not thinking about it again. The problem, of course, is that touching, interacting with it, was your very first mistake. The way she pulled on her skirt, ripped a piece of the fabric, handed it to you, that runs through your mind. At night, holding back, because of course you know if you gave in and masturbated, you'd be tempted to use the device. You feel tingling heat rising up from inside your balls. Every moment of every day, she's there, in some way, teasing. From the back of your mind, the memory of her legs, the memory of her soft skin, of her challenging look. The desire to let out your seed is very powerful. You want to let go. You want to let it fly, to squirt from you in an ejaculatory frenzy, to achieve satiation, satisfaction of a growing hunger. But you will not make it so easy for the witch. You go about your business, ignoring her gift as best you can, and trying not to think of her, the scrap of fabric from her skirt, and the fleshlight itself resting on a shelf. Yes, resting on a shelf. I watch from atop the shelf. From below, I sense the need for pleasure. I can even sense from my spot upon the shelf the semen percolating in the balls, awaiting release. I know there will come a time when anyone with such heavy, seed-filled balls will have to climax, have to release. Watching. It's so familiar. It's what I'm made for, what I yearn for, to extract seed, to bring it out. I sense the familiar tension, the degree of stirring in those swaying balls. It is growing. It has to be obvious below as well. As I watch from my shelf, the shelf where I was placed to wait, I know those balls down there, those sperm-stuffed, swaying sacks of pure, pulsating pleasure, are just percolating, waiting to expel their luscious load, waiting to let out pleasure and sticky signs of surrender in equal measure. They can pretend. Anyone can pretend. But it's futile. Trying to ignore it, keeping it in, enduring as long as possible, is futile. I know there's an upper limit for every penis, every pair of balls. The semen within is going to hit a flowing, sticky crescendo, is going to submit a demand too great for anyone to withstand. And then I will have my time. Then I will have my use. So I am just waiting, observing, savoring the futile fight below, watching from my vantage point, knowing the truth, the outcome, the upcoming defeat. Oh, these long days of waiting, testicles constantly producing, filling, flooding, and stuffing seminal vessels with that oh-so-lusciously sweet, torturous torrent of seed. The release would be splendid already, but I can sense it building, sense the waiting. The accumulation of seed is reaching a limit anyone would have. The penis is edged by the contents of the testes, constantly wanting to leak out, let out, something from within those hot, swelling bounds. Erections endure. Hardness lasts longer and longer each time a glance is stolen at that piece of torn lace next to me, or a glance spared for the toy on its shelf, for me. Trying to ignore it, trying to set it out of mind, out of thoughts, but I am there. And from there, temptation builds itself. The idea is simple, easy even. Why not let off some steam? It already seems like it'd be fine. The witch planted the idea. It barely took any work. She did all she needed to do to set the game in motion and decide its outcome with one simple move, giving that bit of lace and me there on my shelf, watching and waiting. seduction in the mind, the overconfident taking themselves to their own downfall, as it always is. Thoughts of secretly using me, or sneaking me down from my shelf, wrapping me around the thick and ever more aroused erections that happen at all hours of the day. Or to finish off that orgasm and empty those balls of their heavy, seminal load. To let sleep come easier. The temptation in the night has started to creep in. It's been there for a long time, but it's much stronger now than it was long ago. No one will know, right? But what about the witch? Will she know? That is the question. It is so embarrassing to confess defeat in this most intimate way. Watching. Watching as the erection makes ready, breaks down resistance through horny arousal, a sweet seductive pulling. Those heavy vessels begging to be emptied, begging to express the sperm from within, and in that expression to bring so much pleasure from waiting. Always teased. Oh God, I want to come. That's what's going through the brain below. But the brain and the balls are increasingly indistinguishable. Sperm welling up. Thoughts welling up. All directed to a desperate desire to climax. I bet you want to come. It's been so long. I've been waiting. That's what I think, silently. And as I observe, a glance toward me sends sparks through the penis and into the testes below. Glancing at the box is a sure sign of a trapped mind and a load of sperm at the ready. Yes. The night comes, and sure enough, in silence and privacy, with no one to find out, my box is pulled down from the shelf with shaky hands, unboxed at last. I try to do nothing to betray my presence, as I feel lubricant spread thrillingly over my silken interior, and a murmured voice begins its almost tranced recitations, recognizable incantations from the manual, spilling out as the cock eagerly impales me. Finally, and I know what is happening, I know what this must feel like, for I know just how good I am. How could anyone resist? How could anyone fight? Watching labia petals engulf the shaft, forming a soft collar around the base. It is the only moment I will remain visible. I do my best work in private. I've done it by tempting, teasing from the shelf above. Trembling in anticipation of masturbation, fumbling hands cover me with a blanket. Freed from your hands, I immediately come to life. Kissing the head of the cock. My silken insides are under perfect control, able to sense how to deliver pleasure, able to sense vulnerabilities. Greeting the cock with a kiss, I'd ask if it missed me, but it has never had me, never felt me, only dreamed of me. Now it will never forget me. The pulls and tugs are only light, but the jet of pleasure from the shaft engulfed in me is shooting down to prompt the semen and the testes to discharge. To slowly begin this process, this cure for the long denial, the long yearning. The penis responds with a throb, my welcome and delightful reward. I feel it